Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 5th day of February, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Remember the 5th of February? No.
What?
Remember the 5th of February.
Huh? No.
No.
be wary the 5th of February.
There you go, yeah.
Windows devices that aren't connected to the internet for up to 8 hours at a time are very unlikely to successfully update fully and properly, a recent Microsoft investigation revealed. Microsoft Program Manager David Geyer wrote in a recent blog post that devices need a minimum of 2 continuous connected hours and 6 total connected hours to install quality and feature updates. This allows for a successful download and background installations that are able to restart or resume once the device is active and connected. The problem, Microsoft claims, is most prevalent on devices running Windows 10. Those systems require substantially larger updates than Windows 11. Microsoft reduced the size of updates for Windows 11 by 40% through compression technology, thereby cutting time and bandwidth requirements for up. Apparently, they can't zip Windows 10. Thereby cutting time and bandwidth requirements for updates, a Microsoft software engineer and program manager wrote in an October 2021 blog post. Microsoft has invested a significant effort to understand why some Windows devices are still not always fully up to date. About half of Windows 10 devices that are no longer running a serviced build don't spend enough time online for the updates to be downloaded and installed. That number drops to 25% of Windows 10 devices that are on a serviced build that have security updates more than 60 days out of date, according to Microsoft. One problem is end users power down their systems at the end of their workday, eliminating the possibility of updates overnight. When investigating the issue, Microsoft found insufficient update connectivity or the amount of time and bandwidth needed to update hardware completely during the 8 hours of connected time. If a device has insufficient update connectivity, then investigating other update issues is complicated because the low update connectivity can create new issues that go away once there's enough connectivity. The bottom line, however, is that Windows updates are large, one might say huge, and even breaking the updates into smaller segments and spacing them out so they don't take place all at once still requires the machines to be on a long time. Then, once the update is fully downloaded, the PC still has to incorporate the software in background mode to have minimal impact on the machine's performance. The updating issue for Microsoft has been a problem for years. It's not something new with Windows 10. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft. Windows updates can take 8 hours. And your choices are not a problem. That's a bit excessive. Ain't nobody got time for that. Win what now? And, of course, others. So far we have 23 votes in the poll, and win what now is significantly ahead. And we know that that you'll have more to say about this. So you can head over on to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. The second forum down is the poll. Scroll down to the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. Click on that. The second forum down is Poll Discussion. I think I didn't. Did I not put it in? Hold on. Hold on. Hold the heck on right now. It didn't take. Oh, no, there it is. Yes, currently at least the number one item under poll discussion is 5 Feb 22. Microsoft Windows updates can take 8 hours. And if you want to put something in the poll, please do. Please take the poll. We'd love to have you do this. It's in the upper left corner where the big yellow and red.
So essentially, what is all these fixes supposedly going to do?
It's like 100. If you read their note, patch release note, they're fixing almost 100 things every month.
Every month.
And every month is almost always a record month of more patches. It was 118 last month. It's 123 this month.
Right. And these are the every month updates. The problem is, and this has been true for a very long time, if your machine is not on for 8 solid hours, you will not get the updates. So you don't get last month's updates, the month before's updates, the month before that's updates. So you end up with you know, a whole lot of updates you ain't getting.
But the thing of it is, though, is not having the updates right away, to me, is a good thing.
But at some point...
Oh, yeah. No, but right. After, you know... All right, so I don't get them this month. I go for next month. I'm always... I'd rather be a month behind
but
and
when
not
you
be
do
the
that, you have to leave your machine on for a long time that's in order
not,
to get... For you, that's not a problem.
You're right.
Many people don't leave their machines on overnight.
No, I understand.
And so they are not... You know, they say, oh, I'm up to date. No, you're not.
Mm-mm.
No, you're not. And the problem is not the speed of your internet connection.
Right.
So, you know, if you're sitting there saying, well, I'm on Greenlight or I'm on, you know, whatever, it's not you, it's Microsoft's end. Doesn't matter how fast your connection in, if Microsoft is not pushing out those updates quickly.
And to the millions of people that it's got to update to.
And they're not putting it on their fastest machine, let's be honest, there.
We had a customer bring a PC in the other day that was running 1907.
Right.
Really? Your computer hasn't updated in 4 years?
Right.
That might be your problem. And the other issue is disk space. Older computers typically will have hard drives that are big. You know, a terabyte hard drive was small for a while.
Right.
And now we're seeing a lot of the newer machines will come with SSDs, because they're faster. But because they cost more, a typical laptop might only come with a 256 SSD, which isn't that big.
No, it isn't.
Or you have to pay a lot to get the terabyte SSD. And, we see the similar thing in the Mac world. The OS 12, installer was 13 gigabytes. Should have been 12. It was 12 point something gigs. So OS 12.
13.
Yeah. Plus, so you still need 13 gigs free to download it. You need about, 15, 20 gigs free to install it.
They say double the space.
Right. And so you really should have like 50 gigs free on your drive before you even start.
Right.
And if you've got an older machine with a 128 or a 256, it might be barely enough. And we're seeing a lot of people coming in that the install failed halfway through because it ran out of disk space. So it checks at the beginning. Oh, you need 20 gigs free. You've got 19? I'll start.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, halfway through, it runs out. And
it chokes.
Yeah. And same thing happens on the phones, too. On the older phones with a 16-gig phone, you try to load the 4-gig update, and you've only got 3 gigs free on the phone. And that's a horrible thing. So one of the, especially with on the phones, one of the things you can do is update it from a computer. So then the installer is on the computer, the temp space is on the computer. You need less amount of free space on your phone.
Right.
But it's less convenient that way.
It's less convenient. And in terms of those updates, you know, yes, you should not be the pioneer, but many of the things that have been out there for months and months and months are still being exploited. So if you haven't done the updates, you're vulnerable.
I just read a story about
it's a double-edged sword.
Right.
Yeah, and if you load the update too soon, you may be one of the people that have an outlying computer that crashes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I just read a story about Excel macros, XLM. We've known for years Excel macros are dangerous because the bad guys are using them. Microsoft is still not disabling Excel macros by default. So the Excel macros came out in 2005. In 2006, Visual Basic came out and everyone stopped using macros, except the bad guys. But in the last 6 months, there have been a dozen malware attacks and virus and ransom and state-sponsored attacks. Basically, the Fancy Bear, Russian hacking group, are using Excel macros to sneak in as a Word document in email.
Just because they're called Excel macros, they work in
across the board.
Yeah, they're generic macros.
Right. And so you can get infected and attacked by this because it's not turned off. Now, the article was saying that what Microsoft did say is their paid enterprise users, will be off. But right. for everybody else, it's on by default, and you have to go in and turn it off yourself.
Right, because they're not being paid enough to flip one switch in their code.
Because if they turn it off, some enterprise user that's still using 2005 code, their program will quit working.
Yeah. No, I always delay mine by at least 2 weeks.
And that's fair. But, at this point, after this upcoming Patch Tuesday, wait another week or two.
Yep.
And then leave your machine on for a couple of nights.
That's the thing. Mine never.
Right. Yours is all on all
mine
the time.
Are on 24/7. The only thing I do is turn off the monitors because it's less wear and tear, believe it or not, folks, on a computer to leave it on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's the turn it off, turn it on. It's. Back in the day,
the
we used to always
heating and cooling cycles.
Yeah, the people would sit there, use their computer in the morning for say 15 minutes, shut it off, then come back a little bit later, turn it back on, and then use it for maybe an hour, shut it off, come back in the afternoon. This constant turning on, turning off is more stress on the computer than just leaving it on and turning the monitor off.
And that's what we do with our laptops as well. And in particular, so many people have laptops today.
Yep.
When they're done with whatever little thing they're doing, they close the lid and walk away. Well, now you don't get the updates.
Because
it went to sleep. And you need to leave it on at least overnight. And if you haven't had the updates in months and months and months, you maybe need to leave it on overnight for a few nights.
No, you can change. I believe you can change a feature in the laptop to when the lid is closed to do nothing. So it won't shut it down. But by default, the default is when the lid is closed, you go into sleep mode.
Right.
Right.
So because it doesn't use much power, and it also cuts down on the heat the computer is generating. I think I've told the story before. We had people who have closed the lid on their laptop, and it doesn't go to sleep, and they'll throw it in their bag. And the heat of the laptop melts all the plastic keys. So you pull it out of your bag and all the
gooey
keys
mess.
Melt it off.
So what you really want to do is leave it, open it up and leave it open overnight, a couple of times and, maybe get, one of those pads or an active cooling system or just put it on a cookie rack.
Yeah.
And let the air go under it. I got, in one of the, bags of crap from Woot. I got a whole set of four laptop stands.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's got one. My daughter's got one. I've got one. There's another one sitting around somewhere. And they keep the laptops fairly cool because air can flow under them.
Yep.
Which is, generally people have them on a desktop.
I'm using a passive one now.
Right, you're using a passive one. And of course, frankly, the laptops that I have don't generate the amount of heat a Mac generates, but still.
This one is so much cooler than the old one was.
Yeah. But yeah, so, at any rate, the idea here is that you've got updates that you probably don't have and they're accumulating. So, like Dave said, wait until maybe 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
And then leave your laptop or desktop on overnight for two or three nights.
Yeah.
Let it go and see what happens. You should update completely at that point and then be much better off.
Speaking
Before we move on, the Mac has a setting called power nap. So when you put it to sleep, every now and then it will wake up a little bit, see if it needs to back up and check your mail for you. Because that's what people want to do. When they open the lid, they want all their new mail to be there.
Right.
So you can have a nap while it's sleeping.
They're nice.
Okay, speaking of updates in that tone.
Yes.
Are you going to do it?
Am I going to do what?
Change your Raspberry Pi to system 64-bit?
I already am running a 64-bit system. Thank
you are? Yeah.
I downloaded the beta.
Okay.
And now I just have to update to the final version, but it runs great, thank you very much.
And now it's, if you download the, what we're talking about is Raspberry Pis, folks, and they've now officially, it's been in beta and it's been rumored, and I haven't dared talk about it because, there was always speculation. Well, this weekend, I wait for it to actually be officially announced, but they officially moved, Raspbian, out of 32-bit mode to a full 64-bit mode. So now even on the imager, when you download, say, the Raspberry Pi imager, one of the selections were always, you know, 32 is up at the top. You scroll down, and you can now get the 64-bit of Raspberry Pi. It's been in beta for a while, but it's officially, as of this week, now 64-bit.
Which, and like, you've always been able to load other operating systems in 64-bit.
Right.
Now, again, it depends on how much RAM you have as to whether this matters. So if you only have a 2-gig Raspberry Pi, or if you're running a Pi Zero with 512 meg, you really don't want 64-bit.
No.
But if you're running, you know, 2-gig or even 4-gig, the 32-bit version is fine. But for those of you with Raspberry Pi 4s with 8-gig, the 64-bit version runs faster, cleaner, and shockingly kind of smaller for a lot of things.
That's what I'm running right now. I've got
less RAM.
Workstation and a server on two different Raspberry Pis, 8 gigs, and I'm running the 64 bits. And like I say, the one server placed this huge tower that was like 3 foot tall.
Yep.
And I replaced that with just this little thing that's the size of a deck of cards. Matter of fact, I just ordered, speaking of hard drives, Steve, I got another 2 terabyte SSD drive for $189.
Yeah. They're getting cheap. I've got an old 2-gig spinning drive on mine because I had it sitting around.
Yeah.
Why spend money? But that's fine for what I use it for. But yeah, so
it's
it's really fast. If you're a Raspberry Pi user, that's probably something you want to look into. You know, my 400 is only 4 gig, so the 32-bit version is fine for it. But on my 8-gig 4, I definitely am running 64-bit.
The price of those starter kits went up a little bit.
Yeah, everything's going up. What are you going
to
do?
They went up to, I want to get another one. Well, the thing that is,
I think we're probably synced because I was looking this week, too. I don't need another one.
Well, I want to get it so I can play with the Ubuntu. I want to sit there, and instead of having another big, bulky computer, I can sit there and put this little Raspberry Pi, on one of my other monitors, hook it up and run it, and it's just this little box, and it's tied to my network.
Yep.
I'm looking on a website here that's known for their new chicken embryos.
What now?
What?
They have a 15 terabyte SSD drive for only $3,300.
Is that all?
Yeah.
That's all?
I was looking on that website myself the other day.
Yeah.
No, I got another. Well, I wound up on Amazon. I wound up, getting the 2 terabyte. And I wound up getting, because you got to have the cord that goes, the USB 3 to the SSD drive.
Right.
And they were only $10 for the cables, so I thought,
Yeah, that's one thing to keep in mind is a lot of times when you buy a raw drive like that, you don't get any cables with it.
Right.
So you got to hope the cables are either already in your computer or you make sure
Amazon had it there that you could get it, so I bought 3 of them. I figured $10 a piece because I'm going to use one on the current drive, and if I talk myself into getting another Raspberry Pi, which I probably will, I'm going to need a cable because I've got, like you, I've got some extra SSD, regular spinning hard drives laying around. If I'm going to play, I'll do it there. That way, if it gets messed up, because I make mine all bootable. In the Raspberry system, you can go down there and say, no, instead of making SSD, the micro SD cards, make it boot off the hard drive.
Right.
So that's what I love doing. It's just that way I don't have to play with those stupid little chip.
Right.
Playing around with those and losing them.
We saw one the other day when we were searching for new drives to stock. It was a fast SSD, but it came in a USB 2 enclosure.
What?
Well, we looked it up because it was cheap. Oh, that's cheap. Let's look at that one. USB 2? Why?
Take it out of it.
Well, then you got to buy a USB 3 enclosure. So you might as well.
It depends on what you're connecting it to.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yes, I was also looking at new Raspberry Pis. I still haven't got my Raspberry Pi Zero 2W.
Yeah, no, I think I saw the new starter kit is up to 227 now. That's the full kit. It includes the case, the board, 8 gig. That's an 8 gig model.
Well, the starter kit over a Canon kit is 139. 8 gig, 32 gig, Pi 4.
Okay, but I
now with a passively cooled aluminum case.
No, it's got a fan.
That was the one I'm looking at. Someone of those. Wait, there's now, more. There's a passively cooled aluminum case. No, and this one has a fan.
That has the power switch on it.
This one does not have the power switch.
Yeah, see, I like the power
switch. But I don't need the power switch because I never turn them off.
Well, if I'm going to use this for, you know, trying out different operating systems, I like to shut them down. And I don't just like to, boom.
I use them for utility, so they're on 24/7. I don't.
Well, that's the way my server.
And if I want to use it for that, I'll just buy a separate switch and add that in. But
I forget what this one. I got to look again. Well, I just started looking just a couple days ago, having time off. You know, gets me in trouble sometimes.
You get the heat sinks. You get the Canikit fan. You get everything. So it's in pretty good shape there. I got to say, I'm tempted. I don't need another one. I don't need another one. I don't need another one. We're going to take a quick break.
Yes, you do.
And I do not. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You should give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with more sound bites right on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites and we have Mark.
I was going to say, before we go to Mark, now you got me in bigger trouble.
What did I do now?
Well, I didn't think about going
to Canikit.
Amazon. I was over on Amazon.
And I was going to save $100.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's over $100.
And I'll only charge you 50% for the referral.
And what? I did find a power supply with a switch for $10 on Amazon. But a different one than that.
Yeah, that's okay. But yeah, 140 versus 227?
Yeah. Yeah. Saving $90.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's getting more and more justifiable.
Yes, it is. Mm. Oh, finally, now I'm tempting you. Thank you very much.
Well, you know that's where it originally started.
I do. I do know that. It is all my fault originally.
From original.
I accept that. I have broad shoulders. All right. Our first caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up? Mark? Hello, Mark. Oh, there you go.
Hello. Hey.
Yep. Hi. Yeah. What's up?
Hi. How are you guys?
Peachy. How are you?
I'm good. I was wondering, have you guys heard of the photo that background, like a wallpaper on a phone, that wasn't malware, wasn't a virus of any kind, but yet crashed your phone and reset it?
There have been different compression formats that are coming out. And so JPEG is one compression format. There's a better format, the high-efficiency image format, the HEIF. And some of the older OSs don't support it, and they can crash trying to display it.
Yeah, there is a photo out there that somebody took. It's one photo that they've been able to find, and it is one pixel the phone cannot render.
Yeah, it's a picture of a lake, and it's it crashes Android phones. It's a wallpaper image. It's a pretty sunset on a lake. Yeah. Mountains, forest. There's a bug in the coding of it.
Yeah, it's done in Dolby, some Dolby format because most of the phones want, what is it, S, what format is the color?
sRGB.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and, yeah, so it's a weird color palette, yeah.
And the only way they found a way around it is when you bring it up from the website is to take a screenshot of it.
Right. It's basically there's a bug in the algorithm that created the picture.
Yeah.
And that bug is crashing Android phones. It's a picture of a lake and a sunset. It's really a lovely picture.
Yeah. And when you look at it done in the regular color scheme, it is a dull, boring photo.
Right.
But when it's rendered in the Dolby format, it's very vibrant.
Yep.
So that's what's crashing it. I found it really bizarre. When I heard the story, I swore it was a virus or malware.
There have been issues with text messaging. Someone figures out that if you send this specific character in this specific Indian language, it will crash your phone.
Right.
Because there's something in the text processing app that doesn't work. And a crash, quite often, is the first step to a bad guy releasing an exploit. Because if you can make it crash, you might be able to make it do something else, like run your code.
Right, right. So I guess they're going to fix this particular problem in the next version of Android.
Right.
So, but, you know, that they put those out every year.
Yep, that's exactly right. So,
Windows was bad.
Well, listen, yeah. Everything's got its glitches.
Yeah, you just bought a phone, and 6 months later, it's out of date.
Right.
But, yeah, I found that very interesting story.
It's a good story. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, you got it.
Yep. We have also discovered that if you save a file on Google Docs that contains only a 0 or a 1, Google then kills your account because you're some sort of virus.
Interesting.
That's something that Google has to deal with at some point, I think.
It's one of those odd occurrences that shouldn't happen. No one. How likely is it that someone's going to make a file with a single character that's a 0 or a 1?
Right. Somebody did.
Somebody did and found it out. Yeah, that's how people are finding these text message things that will crash your phone or tighten you.
They're just trying everything.
Trying every possible combination and seeing what happens.
Yeah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Batavia, New York. What's up, Mike?
I've got a question. Well, the question would be, where do you go to learn about memory? Okay. And then the reason why I'm asking about this is that my son-in-law, who's a gamer, came over and gave me a memory that is not for my computer, okay? I put it in, essentially, I can double the amount of RAM I have in my computer with it. And I don't know how you would go about finding that, you know what I mean? And the things like registered and unregistered, I really don't understand that, you know what I mean?
That would be in the manual for your motherboard.
Yeah,
every motherboard is different.
Yeah, you've got to have, it'll take certain speeds of memory.
Yeah.
And he can give you one that'll probably fit in the slot, but if it's not synced for the right speed for that motherboard, it's going to not boot. It's going to literally go blank.
Well, I put it in, and I ran an hour and 12 minutes of memory test for my BIOS,
mm-hmm.
and it passed everything.
Okay.
Booted it, what happened?
Well, it's fine. I'm running it, now I'm running, Windows on it.
Okay, so.
And it all booted up. But that's what I mean. Somehow the gamers know more. I went on Crucial and ran their memory test thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so it will find the exact memory that your computer needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And gamers typically want as fast as they can get, and so they know all the detailed specs about everything in their motherboards.
Different motherboards.
And there's a difference between identical memory and compatible memory.
Yeah, that's key.
So what he found was compatible memory that will work in your motherboard, even though it's not the same
as the
memory you have. But you need, like you said, you need to know what memory works with what motherboards. And he obviously does. So you win. But there are, if you don't know what you're doing, it can be a real problem.
Yeah. You can spend money and wind up you put it in there and all of a sudden the machine won't boot.
And that type of information is in the manual for your computer. Or from the name brand companies like Crucial and Kingston, they will have a utility that you run on your computer to tell you what kind of RAM you need.
Yeah, well, that's what I've, for years I've always, you know, and if one letter or one number was different, I didn't buy it because it's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And generally, that's true.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, but this just surprised me is that essentially I can double the numbers because I am, that what they, what came, you know, the computer's very old. It's, you know, about 12 years old. And it ran, you know what I mean, back then they only made 4 gig sticks.
Right.
Now I've got 8 gig sticks, so I could essentially double the RAM I've got in the machine.
And lot of times the PCs would ship with less the RAM than it was capable of because that made it cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
And then back then an 8 gig card was horribly expensive. And now the prices have dropped, so it's more cost-effective to put it in. Although I'm starting to see the really old RAM is starting to go up in price. DDR2 and DDR3 mm-hmm. is going up in price because almost all the current computers now are using DDR4.
Well, and there's such a chip shortage, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, is there a place where you can go and read about this or a book or something? I mean, it just seems, I go to Tom's Hardware, and it seems a lot of people will explain how where it gets refreshed and all that, but it doesn't really explain, like, registered and unregistered. And, you know, essentially, what is that? You know, and like on my memory, there's this thing in 2RX8. And you sit there and go, okay, well, it's ECC memory. I understand that. What's the 2RX8? You know, it's like,
right.
It would be great to learn.
Just do a search on Google, YouTube.
Right.
I've tried that. And again, you run into 1,000 videos that will tell you how memory works. None of them explain, like, when you go to purchase it, what does this mean? You know, what's across your
mind? Well, because it's not that generic. See, memory is so specific to a particular motherboard.
I found a website under Make Use Of that's pretty good about, they have a whole section on jargon.
Good.
Yeah.
Clock speed, transfer, bandwidth.
Steve will post that for you, and you can take a look at that, and that's a good place to start at least.
Some of those smaller numbers are the latency on the RAM. The lower the latency, the more it costs.
Right. Yep. Okay, doke?
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. Yeah, that's a huge question, quite honestly.
And the bottom line is you have to get the exact memory your computer needs or it won't work.
Right.
You can buy faster memory. So if your computer needs, you know, 2200, you can get 3000. It won't run at 3000. But you can get it.
Right, right.
So you can pay more to get faster, and it won't run any faster most of the time.
Right.
William, where are you going from?
But that was the other thing some PCs do is they will use slower RAM because it's cheaper.
Indeed.
So a lower-end PC will have less RAM. It will have slower RAM because that was cheaper. They may have saved, you know, $100 on the computer, and when they sell a million of those computers, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. But you can upgrade that. As Mike was saying, gamers, spend a lot of time. Mike, the problem is this is not a 10 minute learn.
Yeah. No.
You're going to spend a lot of time because they spend a lot of time figuring out, what works with what and how it works and all of that.
And a lot of times they like to overclock their computer. So if your computer runs at 3.2 gigahertz, they'll try 3.3 or 3.4. And they can eke another 2 frames out of
it. Or it crashes.
Or it crashes, yeah, and they go back one.
And it's so specific to, you know, each motherboard.
Yeah. Right?
Because no two motherboards are alike. And that's why you just can't say, you know, say, here's a generic and it'll work for all. No, it won't.
Right.
There is, depending on the motherboard and the graphics card you're using and everything else, there's other variables. Like Steve was saying, you can get a real good card, and you might try to overclock it, but the video card doesn't like it. So they'll recommend this or this.
Right.
Too many variables.
Too many variables, and that's it. And again, Mike, one of the things you could do is talk to your son and have him tell you where he learned it.
There you go.
Good father-son moment.
Yeah, teach each other.
Sure. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is William, all the way from Hampton, Virginia. How are things down in Virginia? Don't say it's nice and warm.
Indeed, it's not. It's actually quite chilly down here.
Good.
Sorry. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Define chilly.
Yeah, right.
Well, we have a high of, I think the high today is supposed to be about 40 for us.
All right, hang up on him.
Yeah, we're done.
What's up, William?
Yeah, I made it up to 20, and I didn't zip my coat up on the way in.
Yeah, exactly. What's up, William?
Hey, fellas. I'm just following up on the Raspberry Pi discussion. I remember there was a YouTube channel that was recommended, and please recall that the name of that YouTube channel for me.
Yep, it's L-E-E-P-S-P Video.
L-E-E-P, S as in Sam.
P, Video.
Video?
I believe it is, yeah.
L-E-E-P-S-P Video. Leap SP Video.
I was thinking Lee PSP.
Yeah, he does a great. He does a great job of explaining the different versions of OS that he's tried. He's constantly, you know, experimenting with Raspbian and Twister and all the other iterations that come out. He also walks you through if you want to put Windows on there, how to do it, what sites to go to, and if there's other patches and everything else to help tweak the performance. He plays around with it constantly.
Okay, yeah, I think I have it. I see a little Raspberry in the icon for the channel, so I think it's the right one.
Yeah, and he's got a Windows logo. It's a bicycle with an Android on the bicycle, and one of the wheels is a Windows logo, and the other wheel is an Apple logo.
Nice.
That's kind of cute.
Yes, sir. And the other question also related to Raspberry Pi, I was looking online at various kits, and they're pricing somewhere for the starter four between $100 and $150. Does that pretty much fall in line with what you guys would expect to pay for
yes.
the four?
Yes. Yeah. Go to the CanaKit, CanaKit.com, CanaKit.com, and that's the best place to. Save money. Matter of fact, I found it's cheaper than going to Amazon.
I'm sorry, what was the website again, Dave?
CanaKit, CanaKit.com.
It's a Canadian company, so CanaKit.
And they, matter of fact, I'm looking at one right now for an 8-gig kit, full, you know, with the power switch and everything else, nice case, power fan, 64-gig micro SD card, two cables, power switch, $154.
CanaKit.com. We're having trouble finding that site.
CanaKit.com.
I misspelled it.
Yeah, it's CANA, like Canada.
Yeah.
And Steve's going to post a link.
We started posting them about them in 2018.
Wow. they're... that's a good source to go.
It's the only place I've ever bought it.
Well, that's where I'll probably be getting in trouble by this afternoon.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for the help, guys. I appreciate all you do.
And one of the other things, a great tool if you're not already using it, is download the Raspbian program. And that's the one that you use for burning images and everything else. It does it great in finding, you know, your device that you hook up. And like I say, if you'd rather have it boot off a hard drive instead of the micro SD cards, it's in there.
It's the Raspbian Imager.
Yep.
Yeah, Raspbian Imager.
The Raspberry Pi Imager.
Yep.
Imager. Okay.
If you go to raspberrypi.com/software, you'll see the Raspberry Pi Imager. Scroll down just a little bit, and you'll see it right there.
Right. RaspberryPi.com.
/software.
Uh-huh.
And that'll take you there. Okie doke.
Yeah.
We know what he's going to be doing all afternoon.
That's right. And you're also welcome.
Thanks. Appreciate
just remember us at pledge time that we saved you money.
That's right. Send us that money.
Absolutely. You bet.
All right. Thanks. Tell your friends about the station.
Absolutely.
All right,
guys. Begin.
Thanks. Have fun.
It starts getting light out, and darn it, I forgot to go to bed again.
Exactly. That's Dave.
Yeah.
One thing, one small caveat. Stuff doesn't start shipping for a while yet. So if you buy a new kit, as with everything else, they're a little bit back ordered. particularly the higher end kits.
Hello, your name?
So order now before the shipping goes to May or June.
Yeah. Or one of the older ones, get a 3.
Right. So what I was saying while you were on the phone is that right now they're back ordering stuff. So if you get the high end kit, if you get the low end kit, it ships this month. If you get the very high end kit, it ships in April. So
okay.
Yeah. So it's a little present to your future self.
Yeah.
Works for
Suddenly
me.
Suddenly this thing shows up and it's a happy birthday to me.
It's when it doesn't charge it until then, and suddenly you forgot you ordered that 6 months ago, and then the charge shows up on your account.
Well, yes, yeah. I try to pay for things through PayPal. So I
do everything through PayPal. Matter of fact, I had one item that I ordered, and they said, which was really cool. All of a sudden, I got a notice from PayPal that said, hey, wait a minute. Did you ever get this item? I'm going, no. Matter of fact, I have it. They go, we're refunding your money back.
Nice.
And I wound up getting my money back. It was, you know, like $22 or something for mm-hmm. some cap. But yeah, it's so I got it back and it was cool. I mean, everything I pay by either PayPal or, you know, I've done it on Amazon. But PayPal is the biggest, I mean, because of the protection.
Right.
And everybody likes it too. You know, I've sold a couple things through the PayPal. And people have paid me, and boom, the money's there. So then I ship the thing out, and we're both protected against fraud.
That's right.
You know, I'm not going to.
I do ask Nick through PayPal, and it's worked out well for everybody. There have been a couple people who've said, I don't want your newsletter anymore. Okay, here's your refund. It's easy, it's fast. Everybody wins.
Yeah, and it's just so much safer, too. Everybody's protected that way. You're not going to get stiffed if all of a sudden you send something out and, oh, I'm not paying you for this. It's a piece of junk. Yeah, no.
Right.
I ordered a rocket in December. It was half price, half list price, which was nice. Crazy. So I ordered it. It came last week.
Yeah, of course it did.
And now when I go back and look at the prices, they've all tripled.
Oh,
I'm
good.
Glad I got it when I got it.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, and that's the other thing, you know, it's not going to ship till April, but you know what? It's cheaper now.
Well, that's what I did.
Order two, just in case.
Yeah.
Look at his eyes light up. I've created a monster.
I'll sell you one. No, talking about saving, you know, prices going up in that. I did that with my, because my house was built in 1928. So the furnace is getting a little old. My guy that I have cleaned that, he says, well, yeah, you should really think about getting a new furnace, you know, and come spring. All right. So I said, wait a minute. How much is it going to cost if I order it now versus ordering it then? He says, well, yeah, you could probably save. I saved over $600.
Yep.
It's sitting in, you know, his warehouse right now, but I've already paid for it. And I've also saved $600.
That's exactly
on a more energy efficient. But it's because everything. I mean, we were talking about it just when we started before we started the show. A stupid thing like cream cheese.
Right.
I went to two different stores trying to find simple thing of cream cheese. That's just getting as bad as toilet paper during the pandemic.
Went to the store the other day, and the entire cat food aisle was empty.
Yeah.
But I was able to find. One of the cases had been pushed back against the back wall where you couldn't see it, so I was able to reach in there and pull it in, so now my cats can eat.
There you go, yeah, exactly.
Well, so many items in the grocery stores are, you know, I mean, you go, it looks like, you know, oh, a storm is coming, you know, and they ravish the shelves.
Right.
But that's looking that way week after week.
Yeah, we got a whole foot of snow in February in Rochester, New York. Big deal.
Yeah, that's...
Sorry, but... Big deal.
That's no big. That's like,
yeah. But you know, I did that a couple of years ago with an air conditioner. I bought it in February.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was not quite half price, but it was significantly cheaper than if I had bought it in May or June.
Yeah.
Or,
oh yeah, before the prime season of summer. And that. Yeah.
You know, it was one of those floor mounted things that you put it in the window. You put a hose in the window. Yeah. So it just sat in the basement for 3 months. Big deal.
It saved you money in your pocket.
Saved a bucket load of cash, frankly.
Well, that's the same thing. I had to have my trees trimmed. And, you know, I had the guy come over in fall. He says, well, I'm really kind of busy. He says, if you wouldn't mind putting it off until, like, February, March. I said, no, that's fine by me. And he says, all right, you know, I can give you a 20% discount. Perfect.
Go for it. All right, that music tells us that we have all consecutively conjoined, wasted an entire hour of our lives here with this show. But don't go away, or at least don't go too far, because there's a whole another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. Another hour of Dave Enright, another interminable hour of Steve Ray, and another hour of Nick Francesco. And another hour of you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, right here on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Vote in the poll, and we'll see you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benrick.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites.
All right, we did have a caller tried to call twice from Fairport, and both times I tried picking up, so you're not coming through. Whatever's going on with your phone, we're not trying to ignore you. I've picked up the phone twice, and it says Fairport, but nobody's answering.
Okay.
Just as an
and
FYI.
For the rest of you, and for the person in Fairport, give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. And I will read the news. So, Microsoft released Windows 11 in late 2021 and shifted the focus of development from Windows 10 to Windows 11. Customers with Windows 10 devices may upgrade to Windows 11 for free, but not all Windows 10 devices can be upgraded as Microsoft changed the new operating system's requirements. While it is possible to bypass the requirements, it opens a can of worms that some features may not work properly or at all, and it may cause some future updates to fail. One thing that I worry about is that people are going to call us in the future and say, I can't do this, I can't do that, and then 15 minutes into the conversation, they're going to say, oh yeah, I upgraded to Windows 11, but my system's not supposed to be able to run it. Oh. Okay.
True.
Most Windows 10 devices that do not meet the minimum system requirements will stay on that version of Windows. But what happens when Windows 10 runs out of support in 2025, which sounds like a long time away and isn't? Microsoft lists October 14th, 2025 as the retirement date for Windows 10 Home and Pro, basically all consumer versions of Windows 10. Some users will certainly replace their devices with new ones, which will likely include Windows 11 or at least be compatible with the new operating system. Millions of devices will still be in use by 2025, and these cannot be upgraded to Windows 11 officially, as Microsoft just won't change the system requirements for the new operating system. Some users may upgrade to Windows 11 by bypassing the restrictions. The main issue that Windows 10 users will run into on October 25 is that Microsoft won't create security updates for that operating system anymore. Windows 10 devices will continue to work like before, but there will be security issues that Microsoft won't fix after the last patch day on October 14th, 2025. Continuing to use Windows 10 after October 2025, just as continuing to use Windows 7 is now, it may still be a valid scenario if, for instance, a PC is never, ever, ever connected to the internet, or if your security setup absolutely blocks attacks before they can do any harm. Are you sure yours does? I doubt it. Most Windows users 10 devices, Windows 10 users whose devices are not compatible with Windows 11 have two main options if they want to keep using their device. Upgrade to Windows 11, bypassing the system requirements check in the process, or switch to something else. Linux, Raspberry Pi, Mac, Abacus, paper and pencil. None of those options is ideal from the perspective of a user who wants as few interruptions as possible. So what will you do when your updates stop? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I will say that is the thing I most like about Linux. I've got machines that are almost 20 years old, and I can upgrade them to the newest version of Linux free. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to worry about it's obsolete, it doesn't run, yada, yada, yada. It's great.
One of the interesting things is going to be to see how Microsoft does Windows 10 updates with Windows 11 out now, so that Windows 11 updates, because it's all like still Windows 7 underneath.
Yeah, exactly.
How much of the Windows 11 things will affect 10 and 8 and 7, and they've already stopped updating 7, but all those bugs are still there.
Yep.
And so people that are still running Windows 7, for enterprise users, you can still pay, $30 per user per month for support for Windows 7, but that's ending really soon too.
That's ending too. If you are running Windows 7 and you're connected to the internet, you are probably owned by somebody. Because again, you say, well, I'm not important. Robots don't care.
Yep.
Robots want everybody. So,
everybody.
Exactly. So be aware of that. That's a problem you've got. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
Well, I have a flat screen TV. It's just doesn't have any apps on it, nothing. So I started looking into TVs. Well, I want to upgrade the picture for one thing.
Right.
But then I'm reading stories, horror stories about TVs that if I go out and buy an upgraded TV, it's got, the minute you turn the TV on, there's all kinds of ads and you can't get rid of them. Can you talk about that a little bit? Is there a TV that I could buy that might be a smart TV but doesn't have ads that you can't get rid of?
Ads?
You learn to ignore the ads in all the smart features. What some people do, well, it's getting harder and harder to buy a non-smart TV and then put your own box on it, a Roku or a Google or an Apple TV box.
Because it's built in.
Right. A lot of those services are now built into the smart TV. The early smart TVs could get Netflix and YouTube, and that was about it. Today, there's sort of two classes of smart TVs. There's the ones based on Android OS and one based on Roku OS. And with those versions, they have stores where you can add more streaming services. So you can add Netflix and Amazon and Tubi and Pluto and YouTube TV and all the other TVs.
Peacock,
yeah, all the other services. So you don't necessarily need a cable TV subscription. You can get TV content from other sources. But most of the time, those smart TVs, there will be ads from the TV manufacturer. They're not very obtrusive, and you learn how to ignore them pretty quick.
Well, one of the things that I did, I have a smart TV. Well, higher than stupid TV.
Yeah.
I know there's a medium between dumb TVs and smart TVs. I'm in that medium. And I have attached my Google TV box, my Chromecast, actually, to one of the HDMI ports, and I never use the smart TV feature.
Right.
Of the TV itself, and then I never see the ads
using
or
your
any
own
of that
box.
Stuff. And that extra box is only $29. So yes, in a sense, I'm paying for features I'm not using, but then I'm also now, it cost me $29 to never see ads.
Yeah. I was going to say it's probably the cheaper TVs because that's how they subsidize the price.
Right.
But I'm seeing a Reddit thread about a $2,500 Samsung TV that you cannot opt out of full page ads.
Right, because Samsung wants their money.
And it does seem to be all my Google hits are for Samsung TVs.
Right.
But a $2,500 TV that has unskippable ads is just ridiculous. I could see that maybe a $300 TV.
Well, I got a Vizio, so it was like $150.
Yeah. And,
okay, so I get ads.
But I'm looking at 65.
I don't see them
lately.
Because I don't, they're not obtrusive ads. If I go there, they run kind of on, in between things, yeah. right? So you see, you know, here's your content for this one. Here's your content for this one. Here's a little ad strip.
Yeah.
Here's your content for this one.
See, I got, you know, I wound up getting a cheapie, a 44-inch or 40-inch at Walmart. And it's got, you know, the, like a Roku, like Steve was saying, you, it comes up with sling and all that. But it also, one control, and I can also hook up my external antenna.
Right.
Do you get 8, 10, 30? I don't see any ads.
Yeah, you do. You're just, they're very, very unobtrusive.
LG is starting to add it now. Yeah. So apparently it's a pretty new thing that the companies are adding ads as a new revenue source.
But like I said, if you buy, if you then buy like a $29 Chromecast or however much an Apple Plus thing is or however much a Roku is, $50 you don't see the ads anymore.
It's just like we got used to ignoring the ads on regular commercial television.
Right.
So if I bought a TV and it had the apps, but I wanted to avoid, so the ads come from both the manufacturer and from the installed apps on the that the manufacturer has on the TV. Am I understanding that correctly?
And from the content that you're watching on the app.
Right.
So when you're watching a show, there's ads.
Depends on the service.
Yeah.
Well, people. Some people are saying the minute they turn on the TV, there's ads. So that must be.
From the manufacturer.
Okay.
So depending on which you buy, you may not get that. But again, like I said, I don't see any ads because I go, you know, when I turn my TV on, it's set to go to my Chromecast.
So what is a Chromecast box? What does it do?
It's a tiny little box from Google. It's, I think, $30 right now.
Yeah, it makes a dumb TV smart.
It makes a dumb TV smart. It makes a smart TV smarter? Smart-ish.
Smart in a different way. Smart in a different way, yeah.
And what it does is it's basically like a Roku. You can add apps that give you all of the streaming services.
Like Netflix.
So Netflix,
Amazon Prime,
Discovery Plus, Paramount Plus.
All,
everything except
Apple TV
and the Roku channel.
So if you want to, all right, so I understand that. So now if I want to watch some other channels, are there certain number of channels that come with that box? Or, I mean, am I relying on the tuner of the box or the tuner of the TV?
There is no tuner.
Okay.
Right.
So you need to get a TV service if you want to watch traditional TV shows. You can use your cable TV service with a cable box that would be on HDMI2, for example, or you can use an internet TV service like Hulu TV or YouTube TV or Sling TV. There are other services offering traditional TV channels as a streaming app on your smart TV rather than over cable.
So would a Spectrum subscription, which I already have, be compatible with a Chromecast box?
No, it's a separate thing. So, for example,
you can get the Spectrum app.
You can get the Spectrum app. That's absolutely true.
So you either need a Spectrum box or you need the Spectrum app on the box you do have.
Right. So one of the things you can do is, as Steve said, it's an app. Just like you put apps on your phone, you put apps on your Chrome box.
Mm-hmm.
Your Chromecast.
It basically is a phone without a screen and a cell connection.
Exactly right. And so you add those in because it connects via Wi-Fi, so you need a Wi-Fi router.
Okay.
So you can say, you know, you go into, to let's say, Google Play, and you say, I want to add the Spectrum app to my Chromecast.
Okay.
And then you sign in at through your Spectrum app. Because you have a username and password with Spectrum. You sign in with those, and then you get all the things that you've signed up for.
Okay, I already got the Spectrum subscription for cable TV. So the Chromecast box would allow me to get some streaming services. Am I understanding that?
Yes.
That is exactly right. That's where you would add the apps for Netflix and Amazon Prime and all of those.
And you may also
Disney
find
Plus.
May also find that internet TV services are much, much cheaper than Spectrum TV. I just switched to YouTube TV, and it's half the price of my Spectrum.
And you're getting all the channels you want.
Yeah,
what you have to do is go and check out all the channels you want.
So I just posted a link to Suppose.tv.
That's like I did 5 years ago when I cut the cord. I had cable, and I sat down for literally a year over time and wrote down the different programs and what network they were on. And then I went and searched all the various, and I found Sling happened to be the one service that I was getting all the channels that I was getting on, you know, Spectrum. And I'm only paying $40.
Yeah, they have 42 channels for $35 a month. Hulu TV and YouTube TV are 80 to 90 channels for $70 a month.
Mm-hmm. So what about over the air? NBC, CBS, ABC?
For that, you can get those from internet TV streamers too, like Hulu TV and Sling TV.
Or you can just put in an antenna.
If you're close enough to downtown, Pinnacle Hill specifically, and don't have any big buildings or trees in the way, you can get an antenna to pick up broadcast television. You can get 20 or 30 broadcast channels.
Okay. Well, that was very helpful, guys. Now I understand what I'm going to need to do, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Bye.
It also helps to have the antenna on the roof so that it doesn't have to go through all the houses in your neighborhood.
Right.
Remember, some of us are old enough to remember those giant antennas on the roof.
Yeah. Well, they still have them.
Some of us can remember climbing up on that roof with a walkie-talkie while your father says, left a little, left a little.
I had a friend that had a knob in the living room that would control the motor. They were fancy.
Well, I've got one. Well, I've got two of them. They just go up into the window.
Yeah.
And it's facing south. And I get 8, 10, 13, and a number of other, you know, Fox, and a number of other channels in between, you know, 10.2.
I think I could get 8 in Fairport. I could get 8 and 13, but not 10. Because where my house is and the direction between my
window. 10 is a hard one for a lot of folks all over to get.
Yeah. The only problem I have with YouTube TV is I can't get the History Channel. And I wouldn't see my Forged in Fire.
They're on Disney Plus.
The new episodes?
Pretty sure.
Well, I'll be looking into that, won't I?
Because I see them listed on my YouTube TV. No, wait. I see them listed on my YouTube TV.
Do you? Well, all right. Let me know. Let me know, because that's just one of the very few things keeping me on the cable.
Well, like I say, Sling, I get Discovery.
But some
it's a History Channel.
Yeah, Discovery, Science, and History. Yeah. Are available on different services,
right?
And sometimes you don't get all of the right shows.
Sound by tuning.
And it's it can be tricky.
Okay,
History does, looks like History's not available on UTV on YouTube TV, so it must be we're getting it on Disney Plus.
Right. Well, I'll look.
Or maybe Paramount. I forget now. So between my wife and I, we subscribe to three or four of the other services.
Yeah, well, yeah. So when he's describing something new. Oh, I want to watch this.
Yeah. So you binge it. You sign up. So, and the nice thing about doing internet services is they're much easier to start and stop. So, you know, start Amazon Prime and watch the new Jack Reacher series.
It's wonderful, by the way.
I go to start tonight.
But they're raising the price again. The Prime is going up to 140 a year.
120 bucks. But
that's
you know
what? It is now. It's going up.
We originally got it for the free shipping because of the coffee stand. Yep. So, you know, everything else is gravy to us. Okay.
Discovery Plus, that's where History is. And we have Discovery Plus because my wife likes some of their shows. And I get to watch Mike Rowe and Dirty Jobs.
There you go. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. What's up, Bob?
Good afternoon.
It is.
Your last caller might want to consider a Plex server.
Yes, a Plex server. Well, yes, if you're...
It's a little more complicated.
It's a little complex, but yes.
Yeah, once you set it up, though, it's not that much of a pain in the butt.
Right.
Channel 10, and there's one other around here that's still on VHF, which is where you have your reception problems.
Right.
Most of them are on UHF nowadays.
Right.
As far as whether he can look it over the air, tvfool.org, I think it's .org, and then antennaweb.org.
Yeah, I was just going to AntennaWeb. It tells you what angle you have to point your antenna at.
Right.
Yeah, it also gives you range estimates and so forth.
Yep.
I do that, but I won't put it on the roof because we have too many high wind storms, and I'm too old to climb on that roof every time that something rips it down.
You're right.
I got it in the second floor attic. But another thing with the smart TVs I've found over the years is the apps that come on a smart TV don't last the life of the TV. As soon as Samsung, for example, stops supporting that app, it doesn't work anymore.
Right.
So over time, you'll lose your smart functions. So long term, you're better off buying a dumb TV and sticking a Roku box in it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's, it's actually getting hard to find a dumb TV now.
Yeah. But. I have both a Chromecast and a Roku now. I don't know why I have both, except that the Roku channel only comes on the Roku box. What?
You've been married to Google for a long time.
I have been married to Google for a long time. And I get most of my stuff through them, and it's very convenient and very easy for me. I've been doing it forever, and you just go and add the app, and you're done. It's cool.
Yeah, I prefer Roku because I think we've spoken enough that you know I hate Google.
No, I do understand that, and I don't have a problem with that.
So I went to Roku. Roku was getting expensive, but I believe Roku has, it's either Roku or Sling, that has something you can buy, an AirPlay box, that would make it, you wouldn't have to go through all the work of getting a Plex server set up in order to get your locals. As long as you're in radio range, you can get this AirPlay thing or something like that.
Right. Well, on our TV, we've got a digital antenna. So we can just switch to that, and it picks up all the local stations. In fact, it picks up like 30 local, 40 local stations.
Yeah. Digital is not in the antenna. but try that. If he wants his local stations, because I cut the cord with Spectrum 2 or 3 years ago, and I recently told Sling to take a hike, too, because they were getting too expensive.
Right.
Well, and because there are so many choices now, it is making it easier to switch television services.
Right. Most of them are making it as easy as possible to switch because they want you to.
Yeah. And I don't remember if I mentioned it or not. YouTube TV did something that really shocked me. They were in contract negotiations with some channel, and so that channel got pulled from YouTube TV. And they gave me a $10 discount for the month.
Yep.
And then it came. The channel came back like 3 days later, and they said, here, go ahead, keep the $10. I've never seen a company lower the price if you're getting less service.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the Google fight?
Google TV.
No, it happened on YouTube TV, too.
Well, Google's also...
Where Google is YouTube, yeah.
I think that's what the fight you were talking about there. But anyways, once he gets a Plex server set up, it'll run on Windows, Linux, whatever you want to stick it on.
Right.
You got to learn how to set it up, but once it's done, it's a pretty good TV set.
Yeah, it really is. That's another thing you put on a Raspberry Pi, as a matter of fact. You really do at that point probably want to get the Raspberry Pi 4 with 8 gig. But you can put the, I believe the Plex server is available through the Raspberry Pi OS imager, I think.
And that's one of the differences between the lower-end Chromecasts and lower-end Roku boxes is they have a lower-end CPU in them, so it may take longer to switch channels.
The lower-end. The catch with the lower-end, the $35 boxes, they're wireless only. If you want an Ethernet port with Roku, it's going to cost you about $100.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we often say, Ethernet is more efficient, but wireless is a little more convenient.
Right.
Well, the wireless adapter speeds in I got a couple of Roku Ultras around here, and I run everything wired. I don't like wireless.
Yep.
But the wireless adapters in these Roku boxes are actually faster than Ethernet because they only got 100 mega Ethernet cards in them. So technically the wireless is faster, but the wired connection is lower latency and everything else just works better.
Right. Okay,
so
thanks.
Don't keep out on the Roku box.
Yep, exactly. All right, thanks.
I get a kick out of, especially Roku, where the remote control is bigger than the box itself.
right. They're all kind of miniaturized now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with smaller circuitry. I mean, microcircuit miniaturization.
The system on a chip. Everything is in one chip now.
Yeah. Right. The oldest Roku box we have is on the kitchen TV, and it's not well. So I bought a new one. Now I just have to find the time to not just switch them, but then set up every single one of the 2,000 or 3,000 services that are on that Roku box. So I don't think there's a take all the ones from here and put it on here now. I don't think Roku offers that service.
Oh, the transfer?
Yeah. I don't think they do. But so it'll just be something to do Sunday afternoon.
Well, I've got a challenge. My Sunday is already planned out too, because I just set my wife up with NPass.
Oh yeah,
and trying to get her, because she's one of these folks that has papers with it all written down, crossed out, and that. So her mission right now is to make sure that the current passwords are good, because then we're going to go in. And I'm going to show her how to set up the end. I already got the account set up, but to go in and literally, set all her accounts up.
Yeah, you're going to need beer. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call. We'll be right back in just a few minutes on Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
That song I don't recognize, and it upsets me.
What's it called?
Liner.
Who knows? All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Art from Rochester, New York. Hi, Art. What's up?
Hi. It's an interesting discussion today. I called in because you started talking about television, advertising, general things like that. Also, Nick, you had a Nick Minute on the radio about prices dropping on 4K video cards. So all this in mind, ATSC 3.0 theoretically is coming. My question is, what information do you have, you guys have on that?
On which?
ATSC 3.0. It is the new television broadcast standard.
Oh yeah. Frankly, I have none. I'm sorry. I haven't yet spent much attention on that.
Looks like they have a website built on the same internet protocol backbone as today's popular streaming medias.
So two interesting bits of information that I gleaned when I started looking at this a couple years ago is, theoretically, the new broadcast standard can enter buildings with obstructions. So, for example, I have a brick building right next to me, and I had to move my TV antenna away from the brick building to get better reception. But the thing that really concerns me is what they call the dedicated return channel. And this gets back to the discussion you're having earlier with the caller about advertising coming up on his TV. So my first question when I read about the dedicated return channel, if you know about this, Steve, was how do I block that?
Yeah, I would probably want to do that too. I remember reading about some of the Nielsen boxes that for TV ratings, that they know what you're watching.
Yep.
And pretty much every smart TV app knows what you're watching, how long you're watching, how much you fast forward, and sells that data back to the TV producers.
And if you watch something on Netflix or Amazon Prime or any one of those, they know you're watching it.
Yeah. But broadcast television,
because you're logged in,
right?
Broadcast television does not know any of that. They have no idea how many people are watching. That's why they rely on Nielsen ratings. And when I was a Nielsen family once, it was you're really fastidious the first couple of days, and then you forget about it. And at the end of the 2-week period, you go back and write in everything you think you remember watching.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, if there's a return channel as part of this ATSC, they're trying to add that to broadcast television so that they know what you're watching. And theoretically, they can then tailor your viewing needs. But yeah, they're going to sell that to advertisers.
Right. That's what it's all about. But you know what? Like we said, it's already happening everywhere else. The only place it's not happening is broadcast TV. And that's what they're hoping to change.
So it makes sense they're trying to add that.
Right.
Yeah, it's unfortunately coming, I'm afraid. Well, I guess we'll have to wait. Buffalo and Syracuse apparently have already started the conversion, which is a very odd method of conversion that the FCC is using. But I haven't heard any talk about if and when Rochester's moving.
Yeah, nor have I.
So, be that as it may, I guess I'll keep checking the internet to see what I can find. However, one last parting comment. I actually have a roof-mounted FM antenna with a rotator.
Uh-huh.
So I'm probably the only one in the city left with an actual FM antenna on the roof.
Nice.
And it's pointed directly at you guys.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. That's what we like to hear.
And I'm also a member.
That's even more what we like to hear. Thank you. Yeah, it looks like from their map, Buffalo is in the on-the-air section of ATSC 3.0. But
Buffalo and Syracuse are orange, and that little dark blue spot right in the middle there is Rochester.
That's Rochester, which is an announced target market.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is the FCC isn't giving any additional frequencies, so what they're doing is, like, I don't know how they're going to do this, but, for example, like, all the 4K channels would be on, like, let's say, for example, WXXI's transmitter.
Right.
And the sub-channels would be farmed out across all the other transmitters on Pinnacle Hill.
Right.
So it's not like the Channel 21 transmitter anymore. It's multiple channels. So people have to cooperate now. Can you believe that?
It's unbelievable. Well, the problem is we just don't have any more spectrum. That's easy enough. We just don't have any more.
Well, yeah, they're even taking part of it from us ham operators. They're taking a segment of that because of the 5G. And now they found out with 5G, because a lot of the systems are upgraded around airports, 5G is causing havoc with airplanes trying to land, and you can't use the 5G within that area.
Right.
So, yeah, there's, like you said, there's only so much, and so many folks want to monopolize on it, and it's going to be the money talks and the BS walks.
Exactly right. You ham operators aren't paying enough money to somebody.
Yeah.
So you're the bottom of the totem pole, my friend. Actually, you're the top of the totem pole. The bottom is the most important part of a totem pole.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Okay. So that's coming, ATSC 3.0. It's also called Next Gen TV. It's good for broadcasters. It includes 4K support, enhanced interactive content. That's where we know what you're watching part comes in. And I suppose that also means they can tailor ads to you and stuff like that. We don't have it here, and it is early, it's very early days, so any device you buy for it is going to be expensive. Hmm.
South Korea is at the forefront of ATSC 3 adoption, began testing in 2015, and all major networks are broadcasting in ATSC 3.
Yep.
Wow. A TV station in Raleigh, North Carolina is in the forefront in the U.S. Full-time field testing in Raleigh. I have friends in Raleigh. I'll have to ask them if they heard anything about it.
Yep, we will. All right, thanks.
Thank you. Bye.
Have fun, Bob. Hurt.
Yep. Wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from, and there's always a new one coming.
There's always a new one coming, and at some point they're going to have to supersede the old ones.
Yeah.
And somebody's got to lose. And as we just said, you know, ham radio operators aren't paying anybody.
If I want to pull my black and white 9-inch TV out of the basement and get it running again on ATSC, on NTSC.
Right, no. Now, the question, of course, is can I just add an ATSC antenna?
You need a card that can decode ATSC.
Well, but I mean, would that be in an antenna somewhere so that you buy this unit and then you just plug it into HDMI? You could certainly. Yeah. As to whether or not there is one, I don't know.
Yeah, most of what I've seen now with ATSC2 is that the antenna's got an RF connector and you need an ATSC tuner in your box.
Yeah. Particularly with miniaturization and the stuff they can do today, it shouldn't be difficult to put up one box that includes the antenna, the decoder, everything, and just throw an HDMI port.
You need a wire to go way up the other end. There is a box called the Tableau, which is an ATSC tuner and DVR for 4K over-the-air TV.
Yeah, but a lot of the antenna...
It can record four things at once.
That's really not that long. I mean, you're just talking wire that you could go up into your attic run a wire, you know, the length of your attic and then down into whatever room or back in, and there you go.
Yeah, the Silicon Dust HD Home Run over-the-air DVR has added ATSC3 capability to some of its tuners, too. So several of the over-the-air boxes. So just like you can get a cable box or a streaming box, you can get an over-the-air box that can decode the over-the-air signals. It used to be the tuner was built into your TV, and that was NTSC was the standard then, never twice the same color. And then when they went to digital boxes, you might remember that if you had an analog-only TV, the FCC had a deal where you could get a free digital box so you could pick up digital transmissions. And there are several different companies making over-the-air digital DVRs. Tableau and Silicon Dust are the two big ones.
Right. We'll see. It's all, you know what? It's all changing.
Yep.
It's all changing. It's all going to keep changing. It's going to be...
If you're one of those that insist on free public TV, then you can still use an antenna.
Right. And many people are. You know, that's fair. What just happened here? What an interesting thing that is. Okay. But there's one of the things that we were just talking about were Plex servers. And for those of you who don't know what a Plex server is, it's basically software that lets you stream movies and TV shows and all of that stuff. It's a media server, and anything you can do over the air, over the internet with streaming media, you can do through a Plex.
You're basically building your own Chromecast or Roku or Apple TV.
Exactly.
Use your own computer, or an Apple Raspberry Pi.
Right.
They should make an Apple Pie. I told you about my friend that had Banana Pie.
That's right.
Ooh. Yeah.
And so you're building your own box. You put your own software on it. And it can add channels and services just like the other ones. So one of the things that Plex TV is known for is the number of illegal services you can get on it.
Well, yes. That's on you. If you do that and get caught, you're on your own.
Yep.
Too bad. One of the things that I use my Raspberry Pi for is as a media server. And what I've done is ripped a lot of the DVDs I own legally. So that rather than having to buy a new DVR since my last one died, I can now rip them from my computer into my Raspberry Pi, save them there, and just play them from there anytime I want, just through
VLC.
VLC.
Yeah. So you ripped them all in MPEG-2 format, right? The DVD format. And then you had to rip them all again in MP4.
No, I ripped them directly to MP4. I used Handbrake.
Oh, you skipped MP2.
I skipped MP2. I ripped them right to MP4 at 1080 by whatever.
And so now I got to re-rip them in 4K.
I ripped them in 1920 by 1080.
So regular HD.
Regular HD. I don't have a 4K television yet.
Yep.
And much of what I'm ripping is old TV shows that I have.
Which wouldn't matter anyway.
So it doesn't matter.
We're at 480 lines anyway.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So... that's not a problem. That's so I can just go to my go into my SSH into my Raspberry Pi and say play this.
You were just talking about that the other day with someone.
I'm done.
We recorded all of our vinyl albums onto 8-track, and then we had to put them onto cassette, and then we had to put them onto MP3, and then we put them on AAC.
Why do you think I have a 2-terabyte spinning hard drive yep. on my Raspberry Pi?
Yep.
It's got all my music. I'm putting all my TV on it. It does backups, one of my backups for my documents and stuff. So, yeah, and it's all, and it just sits there 24/7, and every once in a while I go in and update it. And
well, that's why good. I had to go get another 2-terabyte hard drive.
Right.
Because my wife, I went and looked at this other drive where I back her stuff up. Well, I look at it. Dang, half of it's taken up.
Yep.
So I go over her part of the partition where I've got her folders, and you know I select all the files and I look at it and oh, over a terabyte already consumed.
Yes.
All right, so she's getting that one, and I'm just going to hook up a 2-terabyte drive and use that for me.
Yeah, exactly.
A terabyte
right.
is small now.
Yeah, a terabyte is small.
No, she's got to start cleaning up some of these photos.
Yeah, that's not happening. Get over yourself. Back Get when, right over yourself. That's not happening.
Back when you had to pay for film and developing, you were really judicious about the pictures you took.
That's right.
Now I'll take 1,000 pictures in a day at some event.
I have a friend who's a professional photographer.
Yeah.
And he said digital transformed my business.
Mm-hmm.
Because now instead of framing a shot and taking it, I take 50 shots and pick the best one. It yep. works. And I get better shots because he still got the eye. He still does the framing. But now, you know, he can take 50 shots at a time and get the exact one where everybody's smiling or, mm-hmm. or the dog is jumping in midair or whatever yeah. the, you know, whatever it is. And you win.
Yeah.
I remember a phone a few years ago had a feature where.
Burst mode.
Yeah. Well, a lot of phones have burst mode, but this had a feature where if you took a picture of people, it would look at the burst and find the shots where people had their eyes open and build a photograph out of all of your bursts.
I've seen that, yes.
So everyone had their eyes open and were looking at the camera.
Right. But yeah, if you're interested in building your own media server for video, for audio, and for photos, by the way, take a look at Plex. You can build one on Android or Linux. You can build it on a Roku box if you want to, but that isn't easy, but you can build it on a Raspberry Pi, and you can then serve your media, including streaming media, anywhere, anytime.
But a word of caution. Before you actually move everything over, set it up and do some testing.
Right.
Don't go just arbitrarily moving all your photos over there and think that you got it right, and then all of a sudden you lose everything. Like we've said countless times, mm-hmm. back up, do one more thing, back up again.
That's right. Remember my motto, you don't have enough backups.
Because those memories, once they're gone, folks.
They're gone.
I mean, Steve and I can attest to it. Folks have come into our shops over the years and said, could you please get this back? And we'd say, we'd love to. Where's your backups? Well, I meant to. Well, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
We'd meant to help you, too, but can't do it.
We all know what's paved with good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's look, I know for many of you are preaching to the choir. Many of you do backups. How many backups do you do? You don't have enough. And where are those? Remember, it's the 3-2-1 rule. A minimum of 3 backups, a minimum of 2 different media, and a minimum of 1 of them must be off-site. If you're not following the 3-2-1 rule, and for me it's like the 8-6-4 rule, but
mm-hmm.
but if you're not following the 3-2-1 rule, then you definitely don't have enough backups.
Yep.
And for that one person who didn't know they needed to back up, this is your recommendation. Yes, you need a backup copy of all of the stuff on your computer. If your computer died, would you be sad that you lost all those photos? You need a backup copy.
Yeah. You're using a mechanical device.
It's going to break, period.
You just don't know when.
Which is stuffed with the least expensive components.
True.
Think about that.
Cheapest bidder.
That's exactly right. Cheapest bidder got that contract
to do that resistor or that transistor or whatever.
That's exactly right.
We kind of hear a lot. Someone told me Macs don't break. Everything breaks.
Everything.
They're electronic. Breaks. It's not if, it's when.
Right.
And it knows when a bad moment is and will break right then.
That's exactly right. You think they're not? We talk about artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. They've already got it.
In fact, I did a risky thing last night. I installed an OS update last night.
Living on the edge.
Wow, because, you're golden.
Well, because last Saturday.
That's right.
I saw it was available. Oh, I'll upload it this week. I forgot until last night. Of course. But I made sure to do it last night.
But it worked.
Yeah, and everything was working for this morning.
Yep. And that's the important part. But yeah, so you really want to be aware that there are just, it's a risk. And look, if you're the kind of person
your roommate spills a soft drink on your computer, right. Dead.
If you're the sort of person who doesn't mind blowing a couple of $1,000 a week in Vegas, God bless you. Live on the edge. Roll the dice. You know, live, you know, bet on the come. That's your job. But if for the rest of us, for those of us who don't want to face our significant other, our children, our parents, and say we lost all your photos, maybe doing a backup is not a bad idea. And if you go to asknick.com/backup.php, you'll see a whole list of free and paid backup services. So you have no excuses, absolutely none. And they're listed, if you look at soundbites.org, which you may have heard of, soundbites with a Y, the very first item under recent posts, right in the center of the screen, the top center of the screen, says you don't have enough backups. You click on that and it'll tell you a little bit about it and give you a link to my backup page so that you can get your stuff backed up.
Especially the photos. Like I say,
I can't stress
that enough. Documents, yes, folks, it might be a pain in the butt. You can always recreate a document.
You probably have it printed somewhere or you emailed it to whoever wanted it.
Yeah. So that might be, but as far as a photo, guaranteeing that somebody else might have that photo, I wouldn't count on it.
I've got photos on my system of my wife's parents and grandparents and great-grandparents. Do you think I want to go to her someday and say, oh, we had a little accident, I never backed up, all those photos are gone? No. No, I want to live. And so I have them backed up in many places. Look, if you're an Amazon Prime customer right now, at least you have free unlimited photo storage. Why are you not using it?
Yeah.
If you're a Google user, you have 15 gig of photo storage. Why are you not using it? Get yourself backed up. And now you're going to say, yeah, I should do that someday. And then not write it down and never do it. Or you're going to write it down and never do it. Do me a favor. Take a look outside the window. What else have you got to do today?
Shovel.
Back up now. Go out and shovel, honey. I'm backing up.
Yeah,
sun will melt it tomorrow. It's 34.
It's only 15 degrees out. You're not going out there and romping around in the snow and everything else. You know, it's staying where it's warm, and you wind up doing your backups. And the other thing that we've suggested for a lot of folks is get your password manager going.
Yep.
If you haven't done that to get your password secure, there you go.
Yep. Look.
We give you the tools and the knowledge to do it that doesn't cost much of anything. So you've got nobody to blame but yourself when you all of a sudden lose everything.
Right. And like we've been saying, nothing breaks my heart more than I lost all the pictures of my grandparents. Can you get them back? Probably not. You can send them off to Drive Savers for an absolute minimum of $1,000, not counting the actual restoration. But, you know, beyond that, probably not.
Nope.
And people don't back up.
Well,
and like I said, on that backup page I created, 90% of that stuff is free.
You never think anything's going to happen to you.
Right.
Yeah.
It could.
Right.
And it will. That's the sad part. It will. Your computer will die. You will lose data.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's the other problem is, I think I blame this on technology. we were always so used to knowing when a light bulb was going to burn out because you turn it on and all of a sudden it goes super bright.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the next time, boop, pop. Well, nowadays with the newer LED light bulbs and everything else, they're lasting a lot longer. So
7 years.
Yeah, they don't think about it. Whereas before, if you put a regular incandescent light bulb in there, it'd last for a year, year and a half.
And when it only lasts for four, you don't remember how long ago it was, and you just buy a new one.
That's right.
Yeah.
When I installed the LED light in my computer room, I actually stuck a note to my bulletin board with the date on it, and it's now 6 years old.
Yeah.
So I got another year out of that sucker before it goes.
The LEDs, well, even all your towns now are adopting LED lighting for lighting your highways because it's brighter and, it saves a heck of a lot of money in electricity.
Yep. But what Dave was leading up to was the fact that you the annoyance of a dead light bulb is one thing. The disaster of losing your old photos is entirely a different level. So back up. You know, you can replace a computer easily compared to I can't recreate the pictures of my grandparents.
Well, I had that happen. A young lady brought it in, and she had lost pictures of her parents, which had both passed away.
Yep.
And they were photos that nobody had, and she couldn't get them back. They were gone.
Yep. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray because he's holding a gun on me. And I'm Nick Francesco. Listen, like we said, don't even pretend you're not supposed to do this. Go back up. Go back up right now. And we'll be back. We'll be back up in... next week with a whole nother episode of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that with your generous support, we continue to be on the air and continue to be solely member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?